What's up, everybody? It's Barncast Live Selection Sunday edition. How about that?
Woo!
And we are pumped. No, we're not. Auburn, obviously.
Left.
Can you hear him, Daryl?
I cannot.
Okay. Oh, I think your mic came unplugged. There, much like the Auburn.
There we go. How about now?
About a month ago. Yes, you're back.
Much like the lights at Missouri's Field, your mic came unplugged, I think.
Right. Yep. Except I didn't do it. I didn't do this on purpose.
That's right.
That's new.
Yeah, and you had a quick answer. You didn't make us wait an hour and a half to get the issue resolved. 100%.
Okay. Sorry. Let me try this again. Auburn's left out to no surprise. I don't think to a lot of people. Some of the things about the Selection Sunday were a surprise, and I'm sure we'll break it all down here tonight. But Dap, I'm going to start with you. Just overall thoughts on Selection Sunday, Auburn left out, all that good stuff.
Well, it's one of those situations where I'm not surprised that they weren't left out. I could see all the reasons for them being left out, but it feels like it was more of an eyeball test and an emotional and a feeling that the committee had rather than a metrics or data. So that's the one thing that I want to see is I'm not going to sit up here and whine that Auburn got left out because they kind of made their own bed. But if you take away some of the things that they did down the stretch and some of the things we watched as fans or as journalists watched or the committee watched, either decide that you're going to put people in with metrics and data and net and RPI and KenPom and all that, or decide that you're just going to go fuzzy, warm feelings and look and say, well, they had 16 losses, so no way they should get in. And not determine or not look at whether they were the 37th, one of the 37 best teams or not, because all the metrics said they were, okay?
Yeah.
I threw out a stat earlier today where I was thinking about this. Auburn beat the biggest Big East tournament champion, the regular season SEC champion, the SEC tournament champion. In their non-conference, they played the Big 12 regular season and tournament champion, and they beat the and they lost to the Big 10 regular season champion, and oh by the way, lost to the Big 10 tournament champion in Purdue. So it was a gauntlet, and they had some. I mean, NC State got in, you know, and Auburn beat NC State. Texas got in. Auburn beat Texas head to head. So there are a lot of things that are inconsistent, and I think that's my only concern is either use metrics and use these analytics or don't and just say eyeball test. They were trending downward. They came out flat in games. They acted like they didn't want to win or be there. They played like they were not as desperate as the other team they were playing when they should have been playing for everything. And by the way, we're going to penalize you for that, and now you've learned your lesson, or use metrics, one or the other.
Yeah, this is a team that, I mean, show me, don't tell me. Show me you want to be in the tournament. Don't tell me you want to be in the tournament. And I think at the individual level in this roster, their actions did not look like players that were hungry to get into postseason play. I think you can look at several, not everyone, but several of those key guys that Auburn built this roster around. And I mean, for some of them, you can look at previous spots, right, where they went and they didn't make tournament. So, I mean, to me, beat Ole Miss, beat Mississippi State, get one more win, and I do think you're at Mississippi State in the regular season. And then I do think you're in. But or you know, close it out against Tennessee. I think that would have done wonders. It stinks. I don't think this is wrong. I think they made the right decision. I don't think Auburn deserved it. I do think having a tough schedule is part of it, but you're a win or two away, no matter which way you slice it. I also think Auburn probably didn't benefit from this becoming a national story and the controversy. And like, I think Bruce may have hurt us a little bit with the tie of, like, you know, Auburn over at the time an undefeated Miami of Ohio team, because we all know what happens when this Auburn basketball program is in any sort of the spotlight. Everyone assumes the worst. Everyone finds way to hate on this program, whether they're good, whether they're bad, like they were this year, or just whatever, like they were this year. And I think that hurt us. I think if Auburn was kind of sliding under the radar and was just a name like SMU, like Texas, I kind of wonder if the committee would have handled this entire situation differently.
You know, I was talking with Dap about that before we came on. I think so too. And some of it was manufactured, because the initial conversation on TNT Bruce did not say Auburn should be in over Miami of Ohio. It was just a conversation about Miami of Ohio. Later on, he was asked in other shows following that, should Auburn be in over Miami of Ohio directly? And then he answered those. But it was played up like Bruce has been on this PR campaign to like argue for Auburn to be in. And I don't think that's accurate, but it didn't definitely, I don't think, helped in this whole process. Zach, to your point, and this is no knock at you, because I think that I would agree with most of that selection criteria, but a lot of the stuff that you were talking about was, like Dap said, eye test stuff. And if eye test stuff, I can get behind that. Like if it's just eye test stuff, I would say Auburn's February disqualifies them. I would say that. But they keep pumping up net, BPI, strength of schedule record, strength of schedule, Torvik, KenPom, all wins versus the field. That they go through all of these metrics as if it's this big analytical discussion. And then all of a sudden, towards the end, now it's, oh, they lost 16 losses, so 16 losses disqualifies you. Well, that's never been – there's no certain criteria out there that says any losses, you know, kick you out. I don't guess anybody ever lost 15 losses and got in until they did. And now there's 15 lost teams that get in.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at this point, when you're talking about 68 versus 79, or I think Auburn was the third team out by a lot of what I saw. I think there were two other teams.
Second, that might have been there.
So, we're talking about the 69th, nice, 70th, 71st team. And I've said this the past few years.
Technically, it would be, are they – the 41st or 42nd team versus someone else.
That's still stupid. It's still a stupid conversation, I think, at the macro. And I thought this, and I want to be consistent, like, you know, when Auburn was a one seed, you know, the few times, or, you know, a high seed, you know, during the run that we got to witness over the last decade. And like, that's incredible. That's great. Like, well, it was A&M last year. And it's like, who cares? Like, win a freaking game that you're supposed to win. Daryl and I talked earlier about, you know, the football program and what they need to do in 2026. And a big part of it, spoiler, is just win games you're supposed to win. And a lot of this stuff is going to take care of itself. And you couldn't do it. Do I wish Auburn was in the tournament? Yes. Is there an argument for them being in the tournament? Yes. Do I think it's entirely fair? No, I don't. But you knew that this was a chance. And there were several opportunities down the stretch where, all right, if you beat Ole Miss, you're in. If you win in Starkville, you're in. And they couldn't do it. And they didn't look like they really wanted to do it. And that's the thing that I'm having a hard time getting over.
All right. So a couple things, because I'm about to bite through my gums here, my lip. First of all, it's amazing how we were so down and so that's it. It's a pitiful. You lost to Oklahoma and Ole Miss, and those losses turned out to be not as bad as we thought they were at the time. That's the first thing, okay? Sure. This is a team that got to the semifinals, one did, and then Oklahoma was ahead of Auburn in the last four out. I'm going to say something, and I'm going to preface this by saying this is not political. I don't get political. I will not get political with sports. I'm just stating the obvious and the elephant in the room, okay? If there is a tiebreaker or there is a reason to not put Auburn in the tournament, if someone wants to look for a reason, Bruce Pearl and his tweets and the crap he does on X is absolutely the reason that he is not liked. I don't care what anybody says. It's true. It's valid. And I'm going to tell you why it's valid. ESPN is one of the biggest national followers, analytics, breakdown of basketball. And one of their main guys, Michael Wilbon, came on his show when Bruce retired and absolutely obliterated him and said he was divisive, he can't stand him, good riddance. If you think Michael Wilbon is the only person at ESPN that feels that way about Bruce Pearl, there are a lot of people that feel that way about Bruce Pearl, unfortunately. I'm sorry. It's true. The national media and basketball media sometimes mirrors media, and they don't like his views. They don't like what he says. I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm not saying he doesn't have a right to say what he does.
It doesn't help.
It doesn't help, because if you're on the fence, what he does,
and it's humans,
alienates certain it's people.
Yeah.
Yep. And we don't know on that committee who's on that committee that might feel a certain way about what he puts. He's controversial. He's a soundbite, right? He's definitely not boring. And what he says draws attention. And a lot of people don't like what he says. A lot of Auburn people don't like what he says, okay? So if you've got somebody on that committee or a national conglomerate that feels that way about Bruce Pearl, they should put those feelings aside and just do it objectively. But they're human beings, and if they're going to find a way or look for a way to screw Auburn because of Bruce Pearl and not liking him, they will. And that is why I'm just looping back to agreeing with both of you, saying that did not help at all. I think it hurt. I'm not saying it's the reason why, but I think it did Auburn no favors with him being the focal point of that. And also, Kyle, I know you don't have a problem at all with what happened on the sidelines at the end of the Tennessee game. I don't either, but we're not on the committee. And there are people on the committee that saw that and said, that is unacceptable. Wimp Sanderson did it for years in an NAIA school, yelled at the officials and screamed at him from a table at an NAIA school when his sons were coaching. I was there. I was sitting 2 feet from him when he did it. But Bruce does it, and it's controversy for people that don't like him anyway. So I'm just saying he did Auburn no favors in that aspect.
Can y'all fill in, folks, what happened on the sidelines?
After the Tennessee game, Bruce felt like Tennessee was absolutely mugging Auburn, and Auburn wasn't getting a whistle. And so Pearl stood up on the sidelines, Bruce did, and screamed at the official, cussed the official out, and let him know, in so many words, that Auburn was getting screwed. And, of course, AL.com, who, you know, I get why they're AL.com. It should be the University of Alabama.com, should be that newspaper, with Michael Casagrande and all the haters that are so biased and not down the middle. They take a video of it and post it and make a story of it.
Yeah. So I think you could take all the political stuff out of it. I definitely don't think that helps. I just think the conversation about Miami of Ohio from that point forward, if Auburn was on the fence, they weren't getting in.
A guy like Michael Wilbon, who has been at ESPN for 30 years, says he can't stand Bruce Pearl, he's divisive, it has nothing to do with him screaming at officials. It's all about what he tweets
stuff. I get it. Let me hit a couple super chats. Yep. We got Nine Times says, play Miami of Ohio in Atlanta for Hoopsgiving 2026.
Be awesome.
I wish we could have got them in the play-in game. Man, that would have been. Are they in a play-in game? Do we know? I can't even. Chatter, is Miami of Ohio in a play-in game? I saw somebody complaining about them being part of the last four in at 31-1 or whatever. So I wonder if they actually got in a playoff game. We're 40th in net today, but lower net teams got in. Texas is one of them. SMU is one of them. We had a really good net ranking. You're right, Barn Booster. And I don't know that I can make it make sense. I don't know why we have it. Like, why do we have that stuff if we can just pull another arbitrary metric, the 16 losses, we can just pull that out of nowhere and say that's the trump card. I don't really get it. Zach Dixon.
Miami of Ohio is playing SMU. A lot of people are letting us know. Thank y'all.
Got it. This team's tough schedule didn't match this team's talent, if that makes sense.
True.
Yeah, we weren't good enough talent-wise for this for this schedule. And that clearly, I mean, from a win-loss perspective.
When that schedule came out last year, I looked at Zach at SEC Media Days, and we had a little private media session with Bruce Pearl. And one of the things I said to Zach was, he must feel really, really good about this team to schedule this kind of schedule. And it turned out it got him a number one seed, and he beat people that, I mean, Houston and Purdue and some of those teams. So And we forget that, you know, Auburn beat a St. John's team that's playing as good as anybody, a Florida team, an Arkansas team. I mean,
well, they beat they beat a 1 seed, a 4 seed, a 5 seed, a 7 seed, 2 11 seeds, and a 15 seed.
That's all their wins against teams in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. I do also think it's annoying and obnoxious how people are focusing on just the losses and not focusing on
this very the wins. There's a lot of
the losses. They lost to 2 number 1 seeds. In Michigan and Arizona.
It's very strange. Now, when they talked about every other team that was on the bubble, they talked about their wins. But yeah, you know, they didn't do that with Auburn, which is annoying. Yep.
Again, yeah, you're exactly. Barn Booster says, if we win 2 of our 16 losses, I think we're in. I honestly, if the three-pointer against Texas A&M doesn't get overturned, Auburn may be in the tournament.
When I went to bed that night, I did not think that Auburn was going to be a team that wasn't going to get into the NCAA tournament. But what I did think was, by God, and I was furious, I couldn't sleep. I laid there for 3 hours watching the ceiling fan. If this cost Auburn a seed line, I'm going to be pissed. And it may have ended up costing them a berth in the NCAA tournament. Now, how that is so – I mean, if it's not that, it's a double dribble that cost you a spot in the national tournament. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But you had an opportunity.
Is that Jabba?
Yes. But you had an opportunity to make amends for that. If that would have been the last game of the year.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But no,
I'm with you.
Ole Miss, you had Oklahoma, you had Tennessee that you couldn't put away. You let somebody, to me, and I think, again, I told you this, Zach, I said the 20-0 run sealed their fate. I said, if we're looking eyeball tests, and it looked like they were, the 20-0 run was like, this team's collapsing at the wrong time. And they're on a downward trend.
Which makes it even more symbolic of the season, right? I mean, going back to the A&M game, I mean, you start out conference play 0-2. And like the A&M one always gets brought up because that's the more controversial one, and rightfully so. But the opener against Georgia, Daryl, I think that's the game where we started the live like too early.
We did.
They were down 4 or whatever. They scored and they were like, oh, they're in overtime. We'll be back in a second. We'll relaunch this live once overtime ends. And, you know, they ran out of gas or whatever. They couldn't close. But, I mean, to start out 0-2 with two like absolutely gut-wrenching losses, if this goes the other way, it's just kind of amazing to think about, okay, does this team develop differently? Does this team have confidence then and actually feel like they're in control of their own destiny instead of like fighting behind the eight ball or feeling like they got screwed? I mean, you can, you know, ifs and buts. I mean, it doesn't matter when it's all said and done. But when you think about the talent that did emerge in time and the ceiling that we saw with them going to Florida and getting the best win in college basketball and all of that, I don't know. It just makes you wonder, like, what could have been if this team did develop differently?
No doubt. Got one from Thomas Jones. I 100% agree with that. That being said, knowing that people at ESPN think of Auburn, someone Auburn you would think would whisper in Bruce's ear, hey, Bruce, just shut up.
Two things can be true at once. I think that he got penalized for that, but I also think you need to be smarter and realize that you're not coaching this team. Your son's coaching this team, and you could be hurting him. So stay in the background a little bit. That's all I'm asking is just tone it down a little bit, right? And so that, you know, it was a comment. He did himself no favors, let's put it that way.
I completely agree. Funny thing, you were talking about AL.com earlier, and I don't know if Kevin Skarbinski still works for AL.com, but he has been pretty anti-Pearl this whole last half of the season and really just hammered on us. And what's funny is if you look at his Twitter recently, it's like he actually stopped being an emotional you know what, and actually started looking at statistics and metrics, and he's like, holy cow. Auburn should be in this thing. He's the one that posted the tweet about wins versus the field with NCAA and the NCAA. SMU has 3 wins versus the field. Auburn has 7. Oklahoma has 5. And then he showed the graphic of all of the key metrics that the committee says they value: the BPI, the net, the strength of record, the WAB. I don't even know what WAB is, but I think it's probably a great metric. The KPI, KenPom, T-Rank with Auburn, Texas, and Oklahoma. I wish you would have done SMU on here. And Auburn's ahead of them in 5 out of 7. Like, Auburn leads them in 5 out of 7 metrics. So all the metrics that the committee says they value the most, Auburn had what was higher ranked than these teams that they let in. I think that's the part that I struggle with the most. If they would just say, if we didn't even know what those things were, if we did not know what those metrics were and what they meant, and it was something secret behind the scenes and only the committee knew about them, I don't think anybody would care. However it shakes out, they could say whatever the heck they want to say about it. But when you put it out there, because you're trying to say we're not going to be biased, you're trying to say we're going to remove the human element, we're just going to go by computers, and then the computer spit out an answer that you don't like, well, you'll just switch to some other method.
Well, and if you're going fully by a computer, why do you have a committee to begin with?
Exactly. And the one metric or the one number, or the one data point that they couldn't get over was the number 16. And I say what you said before, Kyle, but here's the counterpoint to that. Not only what you said is that somebody has to be the one. They did not do what they said they were going to do then, and that is throw out or discount the win that Alabama had with Bediako playing an ineligible player. They said they weren't going to count that. Now, if they didn't and they still didn't get him in at 17 and 15, I don't think Auburn would have been the third team out. I think they would have been, you know, right there at the first team out. It doesn't make sense. They get in the room. There's agendas. I don't care what people say there's agendas and that kind of thing. But I guess at the end of the day, don't make it to where it has to be that close.
Yeah.
Don't give somebody the power.
I want to make sure that nobody thinks that I'm excusing Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Oklahoma down the stretch. I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that those were okay. Because if you win one of those games, you're probably in.
Yep.
You know, if you win one of those, so don't take it as I'm saying like this is a great tournament team and we got completely robbed. No, I think they blew their opportunity multiple times to remove doubt, remove the benefit of the doubt, and they couldn't do it. So now you got to lean on the benefit of the doubt. And where I'm, benefit of the doubt doesn't always have to mean you're out. You know what I mean? Like, just because someone has to give you the benefit of the doubt, that doesn't necessarily mean you're out or automatically out. So I just have issues with consistency. We got another super chat. The Kentucky win, I feel like, was an emotional peak game. Then it's an emotional and mental collapse rest of the season. Wins were available, have to be able to overcome adversity. This team's got – Stephen Pearl teams have to be able to overcome adversity. And what if you want to call this a Stephen Pearl team or not, whatever, he's got to be able to find a way to keep the guys engaged, keep the guys motivated. And that lacked at times for one reason or another. Do we know if we're going to the NIT? I would assume we're going to probably, if we record for long enough, we'll find out, because it's going to be a selection show at like 8:30. Let's talk about the NIT. Let's just go ahead and transition to the NIT. Is there any reason, what's the best reason for Auburn to decline the NIT if you have one? If they were to get the invite and they're the one seed.
Because in my opinion, even if you were to win the NIT, so not after coming off in Final Four performance, I just don't think there's anything to gain, nothing good from a PR standpoint, playing in the NIT. And if you get beat in the first round of the NIT, like Alabama did in 2019.
If you don't win it, it looks terrible.
Yeah. If you don't win it, it looks terrible. And it looks like, you know, I just think it keeps the running joke going, and it keeps the spotlight on the failure of the season going. And it's like, you know, it just keeps that narrative alive of they didn't make the NCAA tournament. And I don't know how motivated certain players are going to be to play in the NIT. So I think you're going to get a crap performance in the NIT, because I just don't think if you can't get up for the second round in Tennessee and you fold and collapse in the last 10 minutes, what are you going to do against you know, Boise State in the NIT. I just don't see what positive that you can. It's to me, you have something to lose, nothing to gain.
So John Calipari and Roy Williams both accepted an NIT invite after winning a national championship.
And John Calipari got beat by Robert Morris in the first round when he was at Kentucky, and it was an absolute disaster. And it was just, I also think John Calipari had a different roster, and he had a different roster coming back the next year. And I think that was pre-NIL, where kids were probably going to be like, I don't need to play this crap. I'll just quit on the season.
Yeah, I mean, that comes from a different era. That's just what you did. If you were a decent team that missed the tournament, you went to the NIT. That's just, there wasn't really any debate about if you were going to go or not. And I think that's a culture thing that's crept into college athletics.
If Steven's saying I'm going to burn it down, I'm going to bring in 13 new guys, I'm like, by all means, like I get it. Like it's kind of like a bowl game if a bunch of dudes opt out. But if you want to bring back Freeman, and if you want to bring back Jovich, and if you want to bring back Sway, and you want to bring back Overton, and they all want to play in it, don't turn it down, man. Give those guys as much opportunity to play. And try to build something for next year, change the culture. Who cares if you don't win it? Like, I think Steven probably needs more games to coach. And those guys, if they're going to come back and you think you can get them back, man, I'm like, give them as many opportunities to play together as possible. You'll probably get three home games, you know, in a row before you go to wherever it is, Indianapolis, or, I mean, it used to be at Madison Square Garden, but I guess it changes now. I don't really see a lot of negative. I know people will say that it could hinder the portal, but the portal doesn't open until after the tournament's over anyway.
I think you leave it up to your team. I think that's where you have a really good idea of the pulse of your team. And I know I normally wouldn't want this to be something that I let players dictate what we do as a program. But in this scenario, I may go to my team, and they probably already have, and said, you want to play in this? If you are, we're going to get after it like it's the NCAA tournament. You better be all in. You better play hard. If not, we're turning it down. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's the era of college basketball we are in. I'd kind of get a gauge or a temperature of the team and how fired up they are. And if Overton and Sway and Murphy and all those guys are like, heck yeah, we want to play. We don't want our season to end this way. That's fine. And if Hall's not excited to play in it, then you don't play him.
Bye.
He wasn't very excited to play in many games on the stretch.
And the problem with the Pettiford situation is he was starting to play his best basketball at the end of the year. If he's not excited about playing it, you just let Overton run the point? I mean, what do? You have no backup point guard.
Yeah.
Blake, I mean, you let Blake run the point? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, like, that may be a huge benefit for next year. If Overton does come back and he gets into some pressure situations where you have to play him at point, I think this would be a good time. I mean, shoot, if you don't want to play in it, have a vote, and whoever wants to play, bring them all. Let's go take on the tournament. If you don't want to play, take your ass home, and we're going to go play in the tournament.
As long as there's enough to field a team.
Yeah, sure.
As long as there's eight, I think you'd have to go with eight. Otherwise, us three will be coming off the bench. And
I'm down.
We don't play more than eight anyway.
I will go get the five hardest fouls you have ever seen.
Look,
if I can catch up.
Man, yes, me too, brother.
I can get in front of them. I'm going to smack.
Give me 5 minutes.
Hey, by the way, I'm talking trash, but I had my kids a baseball practice today, and I tried to track down a fly ball in the outfield today at 40 years old for the first time, and I just about killed myself on a not a bit pretty routine play for the most part. But anyway, I digress. This is going to be the last thing we're going to talk about anyway. So this is any roster philosophy shifts Steven Pearl would make versus Bruce Pearl, and then pony that in with how do we turn this thing around?
I think culture is going to be a big thing for Steven. I mean, obviously you want talent, obviously you want production and all of that. And, you know, as far as value of what you're going to have to spend from an NIL standpoint, but I do think we saw glimpses, and we've talked about it here, that Stephen, from a culture and behavioral standpoint, I think is going to handle things differently than his dad did. You can say that's good. You can say it's bad. I think you make the argument for both. It's different. And we saw that down the stretch. We saw that with some suspensions. We saw that with guys that, you know, posted on social media. We never saw them again. I don't know if that'd be the exact same thing. So you're going to have guys that see that pass what Stephen wants in a player. Yeah. I don't think it's better. I don't think it's worse. I just think it's different. And Stephen's the head coach, and they need to match what he's looking for. So I think personality is going to be a big thing.
Absolutely. I think he's got to have players that are extension of the head coach. And, you know, they always talk about how a head coach's personality, the team should reflect that. I also think I have a feeling that they are going to absolutely sell out in a good way and go all in to get the best roster they can because of the urgency of coming off of a year like this. I think that they're not going to sit on their hands, and they are going to do whatever it takes, which is indicative of having an assistant coach courtside against Queens, which I think is great, but I also think it's a bold, shrewd kind of move you need to make and say, screw you, get over it, cry if you want to win. And that's what you do. You don't care about other people's feelings. You don't care. You know, you go do what you got to do to make your team better. So I think that's something that I think we're going to see, and I agree 100% with Zach. I think this team's going to have a whole different makeup next year that's going to reflect more of the persona of the head coach. And it's going to start with, I think they're going to be extremely, I think he's going to build this team on people that are very, very good defensively and guard you hard for the whole game.
And it may not be a necessarily like a super fun brand of basketball. That may not be his, you know, that may not be his forte, is like running and gunning and whatnot. I think Steven's a defensive guy at heart, and defense in basketball, to me, that is a personality. That is a mindset. That is a culture. I see a lot of people saying culture in the chat. It's absolutely that.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to take guys that play defense first. And we'll sprinkle in some shooters, and we'll sprinkle in this, but a good ball control point guard that can play defense. And I think he's going to want some guys that are going to be tough. He's going to want some guys that are going to be able to extend and get it done on the defensive side. And then they'll figure the offensive piece out. But if I'm looking at personnel, you're asking specifically about personnel, I think that's what it's going to be. It's going to be guys that aren't afraid to mix it up, be physical on defense.
I was talking to a former coach that coached in the SEC for a while last week at lunch, ran into him at lunch. We were talking Auburn. And he said that even when Bruce Pearl, those first couple of years, had teams with losing records, opposing coaches would say how hard it was to play against Auburn, how physically after the game you'd feel spent, you'd feel drained. And he said that this team this year, coaches were remarking about how easy they were to play against.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so I think it needs to get back. I think what you're talking about, it needs to be a hard hat lunchbox kind of team next year where, you know, for 40 minutes you come out of the game.
We accepted the NIT bid, by the way.
Okay. Well, so I'm shocked.
We're playing South Alabama, 9 p.m. tip on what was it, March 17th?
Which is St. Patrick's. Yeah, that's Tuesday.
Okay.
And that's a 9 p.m. tip because the baseball game's at 6 against Georgia Tech. So they're, yeah.
So the good here's the thing, from what I understand, is we did give the team a vote. I got a text message said we gave the team a vote, and the guys voted they wanted to play in it. So the guys that matter, the guys that they want to bring back, they wanted to play.
And not to brag, but we are a one seed. So take that for what it's worth.
One seed, baby, in the NIT, taking on the South Alabama Jags in Neville next Tuesday. So there you go. So all that talk.
And if we win, we'll take on the winner of Seattle U versus St. Thomas.
Gosh, where is St.
Thomas? Which is a school, not a person.
I don't know. I mean, I'm glad the team voted. That I'm shocked by that. I just think it's, man, it just seems like a lose-lose proposition to me, but I'm glad the team wanted to play in it. That's
apparently Yale is in this tournament. That would be a
lot. Oh, I hope. Yeah. That would be
we played them in the championship.
Yes. That would be fun. That would be fun.
Yes. Oklahoma State's in the tournament. Remember, they beat us in the preseason.
Oh, the exhibition game. Yeah.
I was at that game.
Not every Alabama team can say they're a one seed in a postseason tournament, daggum right.
That's
not
true.
Everybody can say that. It's good stuff. Well, there we go. We got basketball. We still got more basketball. So can't wait.
9 p.m. tip. Oh,
Zach, that means we'll be doing a live at 11:15 as I get back from the baseball game that night.
That's oh, cool. Guess so.
Barncasts are going to be lit. We may do the end of the baseball game and then just roll it straight into the
what's yeah.
that? St. Patrick's Day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do Barncast. We're going to do the end of the baseball game and then just roll it straight into the basketball game. That would be sick.
Yeah, bring your green beer with you.
We're going to have some. Guys, anything else?
That'll do it, brother. We've covered
appreciate,
it all.
I appreciate both of y'all. Thanks, everybody, for joining the chat, joining with all the comments. It's good stuff, and we'll get through this. Hopefully, we're going to be NIT champs very, very soon.
I'd get a shirt.
Do not roll tumors if Auburn wins Tuesday night, please, for the love of God.
Hey,
I think if we're doing safe. It, we should be all in. No, I think if we're doing it, we should go all in on it.
All right. Well,
roll everything. Be safe tonight, too. Apparently, there's supposed to be some pretty bad weather across the state of Alabama. So hunker down. Be careful. Love you guys. War Eagle, we're out.
Love you.